So let's start Proverbs as usual. Proverbs 22, let's go there. 22, Shwan. 22:1. Speaking of genealogies and names, I thought this would be a good one to orient ourselves to this morning. Somebody read that when you get there. 22:1. All right, a good name, your name. What is a name? What does that mean, a good name? Yeah, it's your reputation. It's who you are. It's what people say about you when you're not there. Who is that individual, right? And we know that. I think we have an understanding as Christians and as just humans that, boy, your reputation is everything, right? More important than gold or silver, okay? Better than the tangible things of this world is your name. When you go to Israel, you're going to see that this idea is far more prominent even than it is here. Our guy that we're going to work with, his name is Ronan Ben Moshe. The word Ben, B-E-N in Hebrew, you'll see it throughout, means son or son of, okay? So his name literally is Ronan, son of Moses, okay? When they began way back when, and Ronan's family just had to keep it, as they were developing literally last names, the question would always arise, okay, so you're Mike. Whose son are you? Well, I'm Mike, son of Dan. And that's how they would identify themselves, and they would go on up the food chain. So your name literally got associated with whoever your dad was, right? You guys remember the story of David? He gets anointed in 1 Samuel 16, okay? Goes and fights Goliath in 1 Samuel 17. Saul's met him, but kind of forgets who he is. And at the very end of 17, after he defeats Goliath, Saul asks his armor bearer, who is this kid? Like, what just happened? And he asked a very interesting question. Flip back to your left real quick. 1 Samuel 17. Starting in 57, somebody read last two verses of chapter 17, 57 and 58.
And as soon as David returned from the striking down of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with his head of the Philistine in his hand.
Which is awesome, we'll get there. He's standing in front of Saul with Goliath's head in his hand. Yes, that is so manly. Keep going.
And Saul said to him, whose son are you, young man?
And then interesting, whose son are you? Who do you belong to? I need to know about your reputation and who you are, so I'm going to ask about your dad, your family lineage. And he said, I am the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite. Okay, so you see it in other places all throughout Scripture. But there's this great pride in the sense of, where does your name come from? Okay, turn real quick, opposite direction, 2 Corinthians chapter 1. You'll see it in the New Testament with Paul and the people that he was pouring his life into. 2 Corinthians 1, verse 11 or 12. 12. Somebody pick up in 12. Read 12 and 13. 2 Corinthians 1, 12 and 13.
For our boast is this, the testimony of our conscience, that we behaved in the world with simplicity and godly sincerity, not by earthly wisdom, but by the grace of God, and supremely so toward you. For we are not writing to you anything other than what you read and acknowledge, and I hope you will fully acknowledge. So
Paul is saying, I have pride. Have you ever heard a message on holy pride, good pride? He's saying that. Man, I'm proud of this. What is Paul proud of? What is he saying to these Corinthians? Yeah, we're proud of our testimony in the way that we have behaved in front of you, that we've handled ourselves in this world with godliness, with sincerity, that there's no mixing of words. We don't have a public life and a private life. Our name is consistent throughout, okay? Nehemiah, after he finished building the wall, exalts a guy, and he said, this is a faithful man who fears God more than many. Some random dude that you've never heard of. His reputation is what got him exalted because he was a man that was just God-fearing, simple dude, and he said, that's the guy that I want as I leave town and have to hand the reins over to someone else to be in charge, a faithful man who feared God more than many. Gang, your reputation takes years and years to build and a moment to crumble, okay? Ladies, have you seen this in pockets? Do guys' reputations go out as single ladies and you think about other single men? Is there a word on the street about certain guys, stay away from that dude because of decisions that they made and what have you? It's out there, okay? Ladies, same goes for you, right? We've seen that in our circles that we run with, okay? There are girls that you're like, that she's trouble. She's a head case or whatever, okay? And guys are the same way. You have to take years and years and years to build this, and it can crumble in a moment, okay? You do not want to be in a place where you have done damage to your reputation because rebuilding it is very difficult, okay? Remember that. The things in life that you're going to look back on and wish that you had put time and effort into are not the gold and the silver at the end of the day. Your reputation is what you're going to want to pass along. You want your kids to be able to say, that's my dad, that's my mom, right? And those are the things that ultimately will matter to you at the end of it all, okay? So remember that, especially now as we work through a guy whose his name was not one that was bright and shiny. Abraham is not a guy that you would go, oh yeah, clearly God should have picked him. His parents were, for all that we can tell, not the type of lineage that God normally would have chosen from. But nonetheless, he does, all right? Thoughts on that, your name. All right, yes, sir. Yeah. Can you imagine if Ronan's dad had an awful reputation and you were stuck with that? Every time you said your name, you basically said, hi, I'm Ronan, son of an idiot, or son of the town drunk, or son of the most esteemed guy in the village, son of godliness or whatever, right? I mean, that it says something about you. So people didn't just hear son of Moses. They heard, I know that guy, and that guy's fantastic, or boy, that guy's a nut job. You know, so yeah, it certainly sets you down a path. And our names, our last names don't carry that same connotation today. Sladen doesn't mean anything to you. But my reputation in the small town that my parents grew up in, it meant something, right? And it carries around. So it's a great way to look at it. You're trajecting yourself and your kids somewhere.
Is that kind of why it was such a statement for Jesus to call himself the Son of God?
Yeah, you think about it in those terms to a Jew. Yeah. Who am I identifying myself with? That. A piece of it was that. A piece of it was where he was claiming his authority to do his miracles and so on and so forth. So John elevated him, and he said, "I'm son of God." You know. So yeah, there was certainly a piece of that as well. Cool. Good questions. All right. Back to Genesis. Genesis 11. So let's pick up here. All right. Now we finished one major section of Genesis, guys. You have the planks. Okay. God, man, sin. Redemption, okay, civilization in 4 through 5, judgment 6 through 9, nation, races, pagan religions in 12, okay? I want you waking up in the middle of the night with cold sweat saying that stuff, okay? I want you dreaming about it. Again, I want that drilled into your brains. I want you to be able to palm Genesis like a basketball and hold it and say, I can take it apart, I can see the big picture. I want you to own that, all right? Because you're going to be asked to later. Hint, okay? So, you're through the planks, okay? Now we're going to move into the patriarchs. We're going to now watch God after he's laid the planks. He's going to choose his man after the fallout of Babel and the line of Shem. And we're going to see God now pick a name for himself of who he's going to begin to start his name. Now remember, the word Shem means what? The name, okay? So Israel is going to come from a guy named the name, okay? So Abraham is ultimately going to get his lineage linked back all the way to Shem, okay? Son of Noah, son of rest, all right? So let's pick up at 11:27, and I want you guys just to kind of roll through this with moi. Someone pick up at 11:27.
Now these are the generations of Terah. Terah fathered Abram, Nahor, and Haran.
All right, so look up here on this chart. This will help you a little bit. Can you guys see that mildly okay? I know. I'm more technologically advanced than Jeff. You can be sure to tell him that next week. Because that's his job, is to be a tech guy. Okay. So there you go. You got Terah at the top, okay? So poor Abraham had a dad with a girl's name, but nonetheless, we've got Terah, okay? Terah fathers Nahor, Haran, and Abraham, okay? Or Abram, as we're going to continue to hear him in the text, okay? The blue, by the way, is going to be the line that we're going to trace again all the way through Genesis. So you've seen that. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Judah down here, and then Joseph, who's kind of gray blue, okay? So how do you like that? Fancy. Fancy, okay? Yeah, he was busy. Wow. So, all right, so we've got 27. These are the generations of Terah, okay? Generations, Toledot. Again, we're seeing the playing out of these generations, okay? Terah has three kids, okay? Haran, Nahor, and Abraham again. Okay, keep going in 28.
Haran died in the presence of his father Terah, in the land of his kindred, in the land of his kindred, in, I don't know how to say that.
Ur. Ur. Ur the Chaldeans, okay? Ur the Chaldees, okay? Here's Ur the Chaldees.
Nope.
Yep. Okay? Sorry. Okay? So, Promised Land, okay, here's Jerusalem, Mediterranean Sea. You guys remember the Black Sea that we talked about yesterday, sons of Japheth? Those guys are up there, okay? This is Egypt, okay, just to orient you guys to history. Red Sea, okay, so they're going to cross there with the Exodus. Babylon, okay, that's obviously where the nation of Babylon is going to come from. Nineveh in Assyria is up here, okay? This is the Promised Land. That's it. So when you look on a big picture map, it is tiny. It is a whole lot of nothing. We're going to cover this in great detail in the weeks to come, okay, as we talk about the land. This town right here, this is Ur the Chaldeans, okay? So this is where Abraham's father, Abraham's parents came from, okay? That is their land, okay? So notice, we've got something going on over here in this area, and now the story turns to Ur, okay, when they have spread and they have settled and done what God has called them to do, to be fruitful and multiply, Abraham's a dude that grew up here, okay? That's home for him, okay? Rick is going to tell you all about Ur and Sumer and the Sumer culture, okay? That is where he grew up, okay? Really, really cool background that will bring the text to light, so I will let Rick do that for you, okay? But that's Ur. So what happens in Ur, verse 28? You can just tell me. Somebody died. His name is? Not Haran. Close. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, you got it. Haran died in the presence of his father, Terah. Gosh. Like Mike, it says that. Quit being a heretic. No, it's not. That's not what my Bible said. What are you reading out of? Sorry. Yes. Okay. No, it doesn't. Sorry. It's early. I told you guys I left my coffee at home. I'm still catching up. So give me a break. Haran died in the presence of his father, Terah. Okay, so he dies first, okay, in Ur of the Chaldeans. Verse 29, keep reading.
And Abram and Nahor took wives, and the name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife, Milcai.
Okay, so you got Sarai, who's going to be who? Sarah. Okay, so we got Abraham and Sarah, Abram and Sarai, okay. Sarah, verse 30, what is her condition? She's barren, okay? Now, you guys know the story of Abraham. When you're going to father a nation, let's pick a guy whose wife is barren, right? Good job, God, okay? You're going to see this theme all throughout Scripture. God is a big fan of stacking the deck against himself so he can prove how awesome he is and how it all happens because of him, okay? So we've got the father of many nations, okay? That's what Abraham's name means, the father of many, whose wife is barren, okay? So that's our start so far, okay? She had no child. Terah, verse 31, keep reading.
So Terah
dies in Haran, okay? So, odd. This is home, okay? This is like someone saying, yeah, I grew up in Boston. My whole family lives there. One of my brothers dies, and Dad says, let's all leave and go live in California. Like, why would you do that? Your whole family's back in Boston. Everything you know is in Boston. Your life, your home, your history, your business, everything. Why would you up and leave? Like, why is this the case, okay? Now, We don't get the behind the scenes, Paul Harvey, rest of the story here, but we do get it in the book of Acts, okay? So turn to Acts 7. The stoning is Stephen, okay? You guys, where are you at in your Acts journey thus far? Not here yet, I would assume?
No, not here yet.
Okay. You'll get here soon, okay? And then Jeff can reteach anything that I just screw up this morning, okay? Acts 7, verse 2, okay? So Stephen is about to get stoned, first Christian martyr, okay? You'll get there in a bit. And before he dies, as every good pre-stoned person does, they give an Old Testament history, okay? You're going to see a lot of these. On the deathbed, you get Old Testament, or just a walkthrough history from lots of people, okay? This is very Jewish, fascinating, okay? Here's what Stephen says. Pick up in verse 1.
And the high priest said, "Are these things so?" And Stephen said, "Brothers and fathers, hear me. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he lived in Haran."
All right, stop there, okay? So Stephen is connecting the dots all the way to his identity, which is in Abraham, the father of the nation of Israel. And he said, "The God of glory, or the God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia." Where is Mesopotamia? Why do you keep changing maps, Mike? Mesopotamia is down here, okay? That is Mesopotamia, okay? That area, Sumer, okay? Before he lived in Haran, okay? Haran, by the by, which chord we got this morning? Did you come with me? What's that? I do, don't I? You should guys find me one. So Haran is not on this map. It's yonder, up in here, okay? So it's north. There is Haran. You with me? Different map? Okay, so up at the top, that's Haran. Okay, so he is up north. Okay, so he leaves and goes there. Okay, read. So the God of our father, God of our father, the glory of the God appears to Abraham before he's in the promised land, before he's in ultimately Canaan, where he is going to go, but he stops short of that. Okay. Before, I'm sorry, just trying to find the verse again. Before he lived in Haran, okay? Before he goes there. Keep reading. Verse 3.
Leave your country and your people, God said, and go to the land I will show you.
So before he lives in Haran, up north, Stephen says, God appeared to Abraham down here and said, leave your country. Go to this place that you've never been before. Leave everything, okay? Your brothers died. Take your dad. Take whatever, or just go, okay? And I will show you. Go into the land that I will show you. So this, it's again, it's totally foreign. They've never been there. No idea what this place is, okay? Leave this land, okay? Verse 4, read that. So where does his father, Terah, die? According to this text. He gets called here. They go to Haran. Okay? What happens in Haran? Terah dies, and then he goes down into Canaan. Okay? He drops down in that area, right? He finally makes his way in there. Okay? So Stephen gives us a little bit more of a backstory. Okay? There's actually two callings of Abraham. God says, leave your home and go where? Verse 3. Go to the land which I will show you. Which is what land? Is it Haran? No, that is not the promised land. That is not where God wanted Abraham to go. Where did God want Abraham to go? To Canaan, right? Where does Abraham go? To Haran. Now, there's a reason he went through there, okay? That is the route. You see all the rivers? That's the smart way to go, okay? You don't go this way because it's desert and misery, okay? So he would have naturally traveled north through pathways that they would have had water and access to other things. We'll learn a ton about that in Israel. So that was the correct way to go. But he stops in Haran for whatever reason, okay? According to the text, what does it look like? Why in chapter 7 does he stop in Haran? Because his dad dies, okay? So he stops short for whatever reason. Okay, and stays in Haran until his dad dies, and after dad dies, then he completes the call of God on his life. Okay, interesting. Now, Who knows a bit of backstory on Abraham's dad? Anybody know his occupation? I think we get it in Joshua. Is it 24? Somebody turn there and find Tara for me. He's in Joshua 24. Where did I write it down? I want to say it's right at the beginning of chapter 24. Yeah, 24:2.
And Joshua said to all the people, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, long ago your fathers lived beyond the Euphrates, Terah, the father of Abraham and of Nahor. And they served other gods."
So they served other gods, okay? This is Abraham, his dad, Terah, and they served other gods. So what type of guy was Abraham when he left Sumer? He's a polytheist, right? Does he worship the God of Israel? No, he probably hasn't heard of the God of Israel. So he gets this call from God and says, leave everything that you know and go. Okay, many people believe, based on this text, that not only was Terah an idol worshiper, but he was actually an idol maker, that his profession was making idols, okay? This place where they lived was like the idolatry capital of Sumeria, okay? Crazy. So moon worship and all this crazy weird stuff, it started there. So if you think of the most religiously whacked out place in America, I don't know where that would be, where everything's okay, maybe San Francisco or... That's where they called Abraham out of, okay? Where anything goes. Worship whatever you want. And they had certain gods that they would elevate, but this is certainly not a guy that he says, you know what? Good. Let's get a seminary graduate that's out of the Bible Belt, whose dad is a pastor, you know, whose mom knits their own clothes, okay? And let's find someone that's never sinned in their life. Let's get Abraham. Abraham's a guy that's growing up on the streets of San Francisco, who's watching... Everybody worship other gods, is used to that. That was normal in his household, right? They would pray to other gods. And yet this is the guy that God says, you're my God. You're going to start a nation for me. You're not even like home team. You didn't even grow up in the land. I'm going to import you, okay? So fascinating as to why God would choose this guy, okay? So back to Genesis, okay? Look at the story again. I doubt it. Maybe stories of. So heard of, yes, potentially. They certainly didn't worship that God. And if anything, he certainly wasn't important if they knew of him. They may have heard stories from the flood and descendants again. Stories are important, so it's possible. But at the very least, to have some type of very clear, I would guess, audible call from God. God told Abraham to do this. Stephen's very clear on that. And man, he up and leaves. Now, what do you think that was like? Hey, Dad, guess what happened to me last night when I was sleeping? I heard this voice from God. Which God? Was it this one, this one, this one? No, a different God. And he told me, we're supposed to get up, leave everything that's comfortable, quit your job, quit making idols, and we're going to go into the land of this God that he's called us. Like, how did that conversation go, right? That's crazy. And then they take, obviously, their other brother with them, okay? So Terah took Abraham, his son, and the son of Haran, Lot, the son of Haran. They all go, okay? So interesting, okay? What's fascinating to me is they go to Haran, chapter 11, verse 31, and they settle there, okay? They don't go all the way into the land. Why they stop in Haran, I'm not sure. Maybe Pops got sick along the way, and maybe the journey just started getting bad. But you never see a rebuke from God. You never see a, why did you stop short? Why did you not finish the journey? He allows Abraham to bury his father, and then he moves on now with Lot and goes into the land, okay? That's his story. So I just want you guys to see a little bit of backstory on Abraham, okay? Interesting interaction, okay? So the days of Terah, chapter 11, verse 32, we're 205 years, and Terah dies now in Haran. So you've got Abraham now left with Lot, his nephew, okay? Terah's died.
And now he's responsible for Nahor's son, Lot, his nephew. He's going into the promised land, okay? So that's who he's got left with him, okay? So chapter 12, verse 1, I want you guys to just kind of read through this, okay? Chapter 12, 1 through 4.
Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you.
Now, just to be clear, where is Abraham when this call comes? Geographically. He's up in Haran. Okay? God already called him when he was in Mesopotamia and says, leave. God now calls him again and says, Dad's died. I understand it's been rough. Whatever. It's time to go. Finish the call that I put on your life. Okay? Go forth from your country, from your relatives, from your father's house. Abraham, leave everything and go to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you in verse 2. I will make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and the ones who curse you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Dude, that's a pretty cool promise. Okay, we'll talk about that more in a second. What's Abraham's response, verse 4 and 5?
Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. And Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people that they had acquired in Haran. And they set out to go to the land of Canaan. When they came to the land of Canaan...
All right, stop right there. Okay, that's we'll get there in a second. Okay, so now he's got to turn to his wife and to Lot and say, God's serious. Okay, we can't stay in Haran. We need to leave. This is God's call on my life. We're going to go. Okay, now... For a second, I want you guys to pull out of the theological side of this. Pull up your phones and pull up those lyrics, if you don't mind. I just want you guys to listen to a cool song that just pictures this. And just imagine what it would have been like to have been Abraham in this day and to have God's call on your life to leave everything. Okay, so if you don't have a phone, snuggle up with Linda.
In Abraham's shoes for a bit. Yeah, can you imagine? Yeah, travel, what's out there? I mean, likely Abraham hasn't been far outside of home ever, right? This isn't like, oh yeah, people get in a plane and fly from Boston to San Francisco all the time. That had to be crazy.
It shows a glimpse of people's other view that you don't hear about too, like Sarah just thinking about what she may have gone through too.
Yeah, can you imagine? Yeah, what type of wife is Sarah? Well, that's a gutsy wife. I just want to say, I've never even heard of this God, Abraham, much less know him or worship him, or, you know, and you want me to go with you? Okay. What? I'm sorry. Do you not know that I'm barren? You know, right? Exactly. Like that was known, right? Abraham knew that. Tell me about Abraham's faith.
I mean, if I was Abraham, I'd have been freaking out. Like, how am I supposed to tell my wife that we're leaving everything for a God she's never heard
yeah.
of? Yeah. Like, after God had called him.
Yeah. Like, that's one of those honey.
God, like, how am I supposed to tell my wife that?
Yeah. Sit down. This is not a stand-up conversation, right? But you get the impression that Abraham believes that this is going to happen. Like, he's willing to risk everything and say, let's go. So much so, he takes dad and brother, and they leave. They die, and now it's Sarah and him and Lot and all the stuff that they had. And by the way, we'll find out, Abraham probably had a lot of stuff. He came from a well-to-do family. He brings a lot with him. A lot and an actual lot, okay? So, a lot and lot, okay? So, what else do you see?
I like the second verse. It just kind of really tries to comfort her with, like, the grass is the opportunity, and the trees are tall and honey-filled. Sister, come and walk with me. On the first line, so bid your troubled heart be still.
Yeah.
It's really sentimental and just, in a sense, kind of the fear, but...
Yeah, Sarah actually married a guy with feelings. That's good, right? Yeah, and you get the impression that from at least the song, but the text is we don't know, but that there was a great amount of fear and trepidation in moving forward in the call of God. Okay, I bring this up to you guys for this reason. Okay, if God has not called you yet to do something crazy and big and life changing and out of left field, He will. Okay, if you are a follower of Christ and you are committed to serving Him above all things, there will be a point in your life where God says, now is the time. And that may be a geographical relocation, like Abraham. It may be a call into some sort of ministry, be it full-time vocational or as a teacher or as whatever. But He will, without a doubt, call you to serve Him in a way that is more than likely very uncomfortable for you. And how you respond to that call will dictate the rest of your life. Okay? And I don't mean to like over-dramatize that, but that's the reality. Abraham's life is lived in his obedience to this decision. This was the rest of his life, and not just his, but everyone that came after him. He affects his entire family tree, all the way now to Stephen, who's saying, because this guy had the courage to go and to listen and to obey God, here we are. We now have a people. We are now Israel. Okay? So think about that. I don't know what that looks like for you. I have no idea what that call will be.
But I can assure you, if you are a follower of Christ, there will be something that feels this, oh my God, what are you doing in my life, big? Okay? So be prepared for it. Be ready for it. Don't be surprised when it comes. You won't feel ready. But those calls come. See also the book of Nehemiah and holy discontents and God calling regular Joes to do crazy things. Okay? Thoughts on just that piece before we kind of move on. Anybody been through something that feels like that in their life as of yet? Yeah?
Well, no, for me, this internship was kind of out of nowhere. Just one of those moments when it was announced the state of the church, it just was one of those moments that just clicked. It was like, that's what I need to be doing.
Cool. Good. And maybe that's preparation for what's next. So, good. Chaz, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I served a year last year.
Cool.
Big things
last like 2 years. Yeah, you wonder what that's preparation for, right? So, cool. Anybody else? All right, cool. Well, stuff to noodle on, all right, my friends? So, consider that. Let me turn some lights on and we will... Everybody tell them that Jeff did it. This will be interesting. Okay. Yay. It's still kind of functional. All right. Beautiful. All right. So back to Genesis chapter 12. Okay. Huge call on Abraham's life. Okay. Let's pick up back in verse 1. And I want you guys just to notice what God is calling Abraham to do and what he's promising him. Okay. Somebody pick up in 12:1 and let's just read. Loud. More louder. To where? A land. So one piece of this, hey, go, is there's going to be a land. Okay? Keep going.
And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse.
Okay, so I'm going to make you a great what?
Nation.
Nation, okay, or we'll call it seed. Okay? From him, he is going to be the start of something entirely new. Okay? From him will be a seed that will affect many. And it's going to be, according to God, huge. Okay? Land, seed. What else? What else do you see in there? What is he said? What is he guaranteeing that Abraham's going to be to those around him? A blessing. Okay? Land. Seed and blessing. This is called the Abrahamic covenant. This is one of, if not the most, I would probably say the most important covenants in all of Scripture. God says to Abraham, you're coming into a land that I will show you. And he's going to mark out the boundaries of those of that land later. There's a land piece. There is a seed piece. You will be a great nation, okay? You're going to be gigantic to the point where you'll be more than the stars of the sky, the sand and the seashores, God will say, okay? Your seed is going to start something, and you will be a blessing, okay? Now, what do you notice as you just look through that? Is this conditional or is it unconditional? What do you think? What's that? Is God saying, I'm going to do this, period. Whereas God's saying, well, Abraham, if you obey and you do these things, and if you, then I. What type of language is used here in Genesis 12? It's unconditional, okay? Look at how many times God says, end of verse 1, I will show you, I will make your nation great, I will bless you. Verse 3, I will bless those who bless you. Verse 3 again, and I will curse those who curse you. I will, I will, I will, I will, I will, I will. There's no condition put onto this. God is saying to Abraham, I am going to do these things through you. Now, there is certainly a step that Abraham has to take. He's got to choose to obey and walk with God. But this is a unilateral covenant. It is one way. God says, I am going to do this to you. This is what I promise to do through you and your line. Okay? I'm going to give you all these things. Land, seed, and blessing. Okay? So I want you guys to see that. Each one of the aspects of this covenant, land, seed, and blessing, is going to show up in other pieces of Scripture, in other covenants. Okay? So we'll talk through those when we get there. But there are three other covenants that we'll talk about that have to do with this specific one. Okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's going to come to more light as we continue to walk through Abraham's life. So, yeah, I think there's some parallels. And definitely in the type of guy or gal that God likes to use is not your blue chip. It's the, you know, roughneck, whatever. It just so that certainly played out. And I think there is a mirror to salvation in here of just, yeah, Abraham does nothing. He's given these things by God. He has to respond and be obedient. But his obedience isn't even necessarily tied to, it's not a condition upon, right? So, fascinating, okay? Land, seed, and blessing, okay? I want you guys to know those as well, like you know the planks already, okay? So Abraham believes this. Verse 4, he went forth as the Lord had spoken to him. He went with him. Notice that he is 75 years old at the beginning of this journey as we meet Abraham, okay? Abraham's life, as you kind of step back and look at it, is really a series of tests, a series of, from God, will you trust me? I'm going to ask you to do crazy stuff, and I want to see if you will obey. Okay, so this is kind of test one. Okay, there's 8 in his life. So what is the test from God? What would you call this whole area? How would you define that? What is God asking Abraham to do? Leave. Will you trust me and leave? Will you go? Pass or fail? How'd he do? He passed. Okay, so this is all pass fail. Okay, so he doesn't get percentages. But test one, I would call it go or whatever. It's in your chart, in your Genesis chart. You can name them whatever you want to. But I just want you to kind of to begin to see Abraham's life through that lens. Will you trust me? Will you go? Okay, trust in this instance means leave and go to the land that I will show you. He passes. Now, he dilly-dallies in Haran for a while before he gets there, but we'll still give him a P, okay? He made it, all right? So, verse 4, leave, 75 years old, okay? Notice verse 5, again, I just want you to reread this. What does he take with him? Yeah, his wife, Sarah, his possessions. Who else?
Lot,
okay? What else? All these people that he'd accumulated, okay? In Haran, okay, so he'd done business there, and he's made money, and the land, there was stuff that he left with when he left Sumer, and they came ultimately into the land of Canaan. Now, what did God tell him to leave with, or did he?
He just said leave.
He just said leave, right? So you can look at this two ways, okay? A lot of what he takes with him is going to get him in trouble, okay? It's going to be a sore spot, okay? If God called you to leave your home and to go from California to Boston, okay? Would you take a lot of stuff with you? Would you take those creature comforts and the things that are security blankets for you? Probably, right? When we moved from Texas to here, we took our furniture and stuff that was important. Like, we just didn't have a yard sale and say, it's you, me, our two kids at the time, and the clothes on our backs, and let's go. We took the things that were important to us, that were valuable, our whoobies, right? Life and those things, okay? It's not necessarily bad, but these things are going to be a thorn in the flesh of Abraham a bit, okay? Some of it is great, right? He takes responsibility for his nephew, okay? Lot's pops had died, so he says, hey, you're my responsibility, okay? I'm obviously going to take my wife, but they take all these possessions with them, okay? You can look at that one of two ways, okay? It can be positive in that, man, he's being responsible and he's made money and that's fine, or these are the things that are going to get him in trouble, okay? So they roll in, verse 5, to the land of Canaan, okay? So they are here. Verse 6, keep going.
Abram passed through the land to the place of at Shechem to the oak of Moreh. At the time of the Canaanites were in the land.
All right, stop there. Okay, so he rolls into the land and he rolls into Shechem. Shechem is currently underneath Palestinian control. We cannot go there. Brad and a couple of our leaders last year had the opportunity to go. Shechem is going to be a pretty important place throughout our journey through the Old Testament. You'll see that name a bunch, okay? And Shechem normally has a pretty negative context about it, okay? It comes with a lot of baggage, okay? So who do you notice is in the land in Shechem? Or Shechem, is it properly pronounced, which will be the last time you hear me say it like that, okay? Because I am not a Jew, okay? But they have that that we don't have, and you're going to have to work on it when you get to Israel. So Shechem is how it's pronounced. And that's white boy Hebrew, so take it for what it's worth, okay? What do you notice? Canaanites, which means what? What do the Canaanites bring with them? Now, fast forward. I mean, we're a long way from Noah, okay? Babel's happened. Tell me about the Canaanites. Who are these people? From Canaan, okay? So these are good. They're... Drop the ice, Canaan. Okay, got it. They're from Canaan. What God do they worship? Yahweh? No, they do not worship Yahweh. So Abraham is rolling into a land called by a God that he's never met before to worship him, and he's going in a land where they all worship that God? No, he did not get called to go to church. You know, in this context, he got called, in a sense, to the mission field. He, as far as we know, is literally the only guy who's ever, at this point, and they probably heard stories, but he's one of the few, at the very least, that are worshiping Yahweh, okay? The Canaanites have all kinds of crazy gods that we'll get into and talk about, okay? So he is certainly, he is a Christian in a pagan land, okay? So, and he goes to the Oak of Moreh. This would have been, in this day and age, probably a pagan altar, a place of worship for them as a Canaanite, okay? So why is it significant that he comes there? And notice what he does in verse 7 when he arrives. What's it look like to walk in the mosque across the street and say, I worship the one true God, Yahweh, and I'm going to build an altar on your place of worship? Are you kidding me? That's what Abraham just did, okay? This isn't subtle. This isn't, I'm going to hide in my little bubble in my house and pretend that nobody knows what I'm doing or finds me. He steps out in faith and says, this God called me, and in your place of worship, I am telling you that I worship another God, and I am physically erecting a monument, a memorial, an offering to him saying, I will follow that God. Like, man, he drew a line in the sand day one, okay? So you kind of get a bit of Abraham's personality, right? Reminds me of Peter a little bit, kind of ready, fire, aim, like, boy, like, attaboy. So significant, okay?
I think because of his background and everything, him trusting, in my opinion, him going, listening to God and moving that distance takes faith.
Yep.
It takes faith and trust, but also I think this is the first, in my opinion, significance that he, like, the faith part, where he's not just trusting, because you can listen to other gods and do other things that are crazy and out there, which I'm sure his family did, but then to actually, this is probably the first thing, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Showing that it's different.
Yeah, absolutely, right? This could have cost him something, right? Maybe his life, I don't know, right? Moving was certainly probably traumatic and God asked a lot of him, but to walk in and declare before everybody, right? He's not making friends and trying to hobnob and at least get on people's good sides and build relationships over a year. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but Abraham just approaches it differently. I am a follower of Yahweh and I don't care what the rest of you think, okay? And you're gonna see Abraham actually has very good relationships with non-Christians in the land, very good, okay? And he's intentional about building those, okay? So for what it's worth, all right? So comes in town, builds an altar at the Oak of Moreh. Keep going in 8. Okay, then where does he go?
Then Abram set out and continued toward the Negev.
The Negev is down south, that's southern Israel. So he comes in from the north and is walking down south, and he's building altars. Okay, so he starts in the north. Shechem is middle, kind of not all the way north, but it's up there. Then Bethel is further south, and Ai as well. Ai is where Joshua comes in to do battle when he crosses over the Jordan River. So kind of again in the middle of the land, and then he gets all the way down in verse 9 to the Negev, okay? And he's making altars, at least at a couple of these places. What's Abraham doing? What do you see here? Stops, builds an altar, moves on. Stops, builds an altar, moves on. Stops, builds an altar, move on.
It's almost like he's kind of claiming that land for Yahweh.
That's exactly what he's doing, okay? He's making a statement about what he believes. God says, this is the land that I want you in, okay? There are no deeds. There is no county clerk to go talk to buy a plot of land, okay? One of the ways that you claim land in Israel is by walking it. And you say, from here to here is my land. And you literally go walk that land and you make a claim to it. That's my altar. That's my altar. That's my well. This is my land, okay? So he's making a statement. God has promised me all of this. Whether it's a pagan altar or place of worship right now, or the Negev and hot and desert, God has said, this is mine and all of my family's, okay? How do you think the non-Christians took to that when he walked into the land? Like, I'm sorry, you're from where? Buddy, no, this, you know, we got squatter's rights. This is our land, okay? But that's exactly what he's doing, okay? So I want you to see that picture. He is claiming the land from the north to the south, that this is what God has given him. Now, he doesn't have all the dimensions yet, and it honestly, they're not super important to Abraham as of yet, but he knows this land of Canaan is his, okay? And God's, but he's going to use him to take it, all right? So, you with me so far? So, pretty good start to Abraham's life, right? Building altars, trusting God, okay? Let's keep going and see what happens next in chapter 10. Or verse 10. Well, bad. Read my mind. Do what I think, not what I say.
Now there was famine in the land. So Abram went down to Egypt to the sojourn there. For the famine was severe in the land.
All right, so there's a famine in the land for whatever reason. Now, normally when you hear about famines, what are famines the result of? Biblically. Lack of obedience often, okay? They can be natural, okay? You're going to find out this famine is very local, okay? This isn't worldwide. So it leads you to believe that this could have been something that God was doing as a test, as a whatever reason. Could have been out of disobedience, but there's a famine in the land. And where does Abraham go? Egypt. Is Egypt part of the promised land? No. Did Abraham know that? More than likely, right? No, it's not that far south, okay? The Negev is the southern border of the promised land, the desert, okay? And once you get into that, it's like, it's pretty difficult to journey, okay? Why would Abraham leave? Practically, why would he go?
There's no food.
There's no food. I have a family. I have possessions, right? Welcome to what happens when you bring a whole lot of stuff with you. What do you have to do with all those things? Oh, all of these mouths need to get fed. And their cattle and their sheep. And there's no food in the land. I am the provider. I am Abraham. I will go to Egypt and I will take care of my family, okay? Very noble thing to do as a man, right? Whether or not God wanted him to go to Abraham or go to Egypt, we don't see in the text. Now, Isaac is going to get same situation, and God is going to say very clearly, don't you dare leave the promised land. Do not go to Egypt. So I infer a little bit that God was beginning to turn the screws a little bit on Abraham and say, how are you going to react? How are you going to react as a man who's in charge of a big family and now you can no longer provide? And all of your money and all of your stuff are useless in this situation. Can Abraham die right now? Yes or no? Can he? Why not?
Because if he dies, then God's promise.
Does he have a kid? No. Is his wife still barren? Yes. He's not going to have a kid for 25 more years. He cannot die because God's promise would be null and void. So now I don't know if Abraham thought that through enough, but you think, boy, if I'm going to be the father of a nation, that means I at least need a kid, probably a male, and I don't have one. So God, what are you doing? So he's going into self-preservation mode. Egypt, Nile, fertile, food, all the time. Let's go to Egypt. Okay, so that's what he does. All right, so he rolls into Egypt because the famine was severe, again, just in the land. Egypt is a couple weeks journey at the most on foot. Note the self. Okay, this is not a long journey. Now, you've got to be careful. It's a lot of desert, but the way that they would have traveled, again, I'll show you guys all this next week. They would have been in established roads, and it had been, you know, easy to get there. Okay, just it took a while, but this isn't, by the way, a 40-year journey. Okay, note this off. All right, so a couple weeks, they roll down, or he rolls down to Egypt, and he brings his wife with him. Verse 11. Okay, so interesting. Sarah is a year younger than Abraham, if I got my math right. So he's 75, which means she's 74. And what does he say about her physical condition? You are beautiful. And people are going to see you and say, thank you very much. I will take her now as my wife. Okay, so that tells you a lot about Abraham's wife. So not only is she godly, because we find out that she is obedient and trusts God like Abraham does and follows her husband, but she's beautiful, okay? So good job, Abraham. He's got a great wife, okay? Less for the beauty and more for the character, okay? But it's just odd at 75 that he was worried about, man, these people in the land are going to see you and think, dude, that is marriage material right there. I want her, okay? So what's his great plan, Abraham? What's he say to her?
Say you are my sister. That it may go well with me because of you.
Okay. What is that called? That is called a lie. Okay. Now, to be fair, they are somehow related. I think she's actually his half-sister or something. Okay. So, again, we'll figure out all the bloodlines later, and God is not a big fan of that as we move on. Okay. He gets very clear on that. But for whatever reason, there is some connection there. So it's kind of one of those what my mom used to call white lies. They're not really lies. They're just kind of lies. Okay, Mom. So.
Why wouldn't they have done that when they were all traveling down to Egypt?
Apparently, there was something about Egypt that Abraham knew of where he was like, they're different here. And he was a little bit. Apparently. So, yeah. He didn't have that same fear in Haran, maybe because he's got dad with him. And in the land, I don't know. It just, that wasn't a concern. But for some reason here, it is. How is Abraham thinking right now? I mean, just walk me through the two things that we've already seen.
He's got to protect what's going to give him his future.
He's in self-preservation protection mode, okay? I am man. I provide. Famine. I go to Egypt, right? Honey, this is bad. You'd lie and make sure. You just see him. How is he operating? Yeah. This is not Abraham, spirit-filled, trusting, building altars guy. God, do you want me to go to Egypt? And there's a famine. You told me to come here. I'm here. Now there's a famine. What do you want me to do? You don't see that, okay? And you're going to see Abraham leave at the end of 13 or the end of 12 with his tail between his legs because God is going to use this as a, Abraham, put your hands on the chalkboard. I'm going to teach you a really good lesson, okay? And it's going to sting a little bit now so it doesn't have to sting a lot later, okay? But he's going to learn a hard lesson in this process. So he rolls down, says, hey, Sarah, we're going to lie. Okay, let's see how this works out for him. And he's concerned, again, did we read 12? What is his ultimate concern?
They'll kill him.
Yeah, it's not so much about you, honey. They'll kill me, and I don't want that. That's bad. And they'll take you as their wife, okay? So apparently the Egyptians had a bit of a reputation about him at this time. It's like, well, she's married. Well, she's not anymore. You're single. How about that? Okay, want to get married? So that's Abraham's concern. So total self-preservation mode, all right? This is my wife. They will kill me, and they will let you live, okay? So, verse 13, please say that you are my sister, that it may go well with me because of you, okay? And that I would live on account of you, okay? So, that is his plan, right? Keep going in verse 14.
When Abram entered Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful.
Okay, so was Abraham right?
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay, so they saw that she was beautiful, so he wasn't crazy. He didn't have a different opinion of his wife, okay? So they saw that she was beautiful, okay? And we'll get there in a second, okay? If we look at Abraham's life in a series of tests, test one was, hey, will you go? Test two is, man, will you trust me? In the midst of famine, in the midst of going on, will you trust me to be in control? As you notice what God likes to do, in, specifically in men's lives, I'm going to take you and put you in a situation where whatever resources you have, they're completely useless. And you cannot fix the situation on your own. You are not in control. Some gals have a much easier time with that because they're called to be in roles often in life to respond and to wait and to submit and to follow someone else's leading. Guys are called to lead. And when we're in situations where our leadership cannot get it done and we have to submit and we have to bow down, that can be very difficult. God puts Abraham here that fast, right? Take all your stuff with you. Great. Bring your cattle. Super, Abraham. Take all your money. Hey, guess what? There's a famine. Your money can't buy food because there's no food. You know, there's an end to how many animals that you can eat that you brought with you before you're out of stuff. What are you going to do, Abraham? So, just interesting to me, okay? So, guys have a hard time with that. So, if test one was to go, test two is, will you trust me? Will you stay where I put you and trust? How does he do? Pass or fail? He fails, okay? So, we'll get maybe a do-over later on this one, okay? He's going to get a test two, take two later. But he fails this one, okay? So, he goes into self-preservation man mode and is going to provide for himself. All right. So, 15, keep going.
And when the princes of Pharaoh saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house.
Wow. So, like, not only is this like the commenters are saying, man, she's a looker. They're saying, Pharaoh, you need to find out about this gal. So, all of Abraham's worst nightmares are coming true. The most powerful man in the known world right now is now interested in my wife, which is not good. I'm a foreigner, and I have no rights here, and I can't do anything. Okay, so 16, keep going.
And for her sake, he dwelt well with Abram, and he had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male servants, female donkeys, and camels.
Okay, so what happens? He gives him a bunch of stuff. So, okay, let me get this right. If I don't trust God, and I lie, I get blessed. Basically, what just happened in Abraham's life, right? Pharaoh said, man, awesome. Your sister is beautiful, okay? Here's a bunch of stuff. Here's some cattle. And some, what is that? What is Pharaoh doing? Buying her. What's about to happen to Sarah? I'm about to become Pharaoh's wife, and husbands and wives are going to do what husbands and wives do. How far is Abraham willing to live this lie? Are you kidding me? That's how far Abraham is willing to say, listen, no, I really value my life. And honey, if it means that you've got to sleep with this dude to cover our lie, how far is God willing to push Abraham? Really? Do you believe that? Abraham, will you really allow Pharaoh to do that? And you get the point that God almost has to step in here and say, okay, wait a second, time out. Abraham, you weren't going to pull the e-brake on this? I have to, okay? What happens, by the way, if Pharaoh sleeps with Hagar, with Sarah, who started the nation of Israel? We don't know. Maybe it was Abraham. Maybe it was Pharaoh. Maybe it was... So God says, we can't do this. So you see how jacked up the situation is in like a few short verses? That's where he is mentally. You can see the downward spiral in his head and what he's willing to do to protect himself and his family, okay? There's a part of that, you're like, good for you. Good for you for providing, not sitting on your hands and crying about the fact that there's no food. You're willing to get up and do something. But boy, this was the wrong something, okay? This is Peter. This is ready, fire, aim. He did not think through this real well, okay? So he gets bought off in verse 16. Here's all this stuff. By the way, he gets, okay, sheep, oxen, donkeys, male and female servants. Who is the female servant that he picks up in verse 16? Who's coming? Hagar. He picks up a virus because he's in a place that he should not be in. And Hagar is going to be a problem for Abraham and his life. And God is going to make him take responsibility for that. Okay? This is where Hagar comes into the picture. Okay? More on her in a little bit. All right? So, female donkeys, camels, the whole thing. 17, keep going.
But the Lord afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife.
Okay, so, like, Pharaoh, something's going terribly wrong in Pharaoh's house, okay? And he realizes what's going on. 18 comes to Abraham.
So Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife?"
So God apparently has revealed this to Pharaoh through sicknesses and plagues or whatever's going on, and he realizes, man, I'm about to sleep with someone that's somebody else's wife, and apparently that's not cool. So Pharaoh is saying, hey, why did you not tell me this? Okay, he calls, I love this, the non-Christian calls the Christian to the carpet on a moral issue and says, dude, why were you dishonest with me? I don't even know your God, and I don't behave like that. What's wrong with you? Like, that's embarrassing for Abraham, right? Here's the guy that came into the land to represent the character and to be the image of God before all these people and to live out who God is to man, and how's he doing? Not so good, right? Not so good, okay? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife, Abram? 19, keep going.
Why did you say she is my sister so that I took her for my wife?
Like, you flat out, to my face, lied to me. You told me this woman was your sister, that she was on the market, not off the market. So I took her, I gave you stuff, and here we go, okay? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go. He gets booted from Egypt, okay? 20, keep going.
And Pharaoh gave men orders concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had.
Okay, so what do you get the impression? What else does he leave with? You know he gets Hagar later, so what does that mean with all the rest of the stuff that Pharaoh had already given him? He kept it. He takes all of it, okay? So Abraham now gets booted out of Egypt. Pharaoh says, you're not welcome here. Go home. Take your sister wife with you, okay, and leave and take all the stuff that I've already given you. Just get out of here. You can kind of see that it's like, dude, just, you know what? I don't want to deal with you. Leave. You're trouble. You've brought plagues on my household. Please hurry up and go, okay? So chapter 12 is a rough start for Abraham, okay? He starts on this emotional high. Let's plant altars. Let's walk the land. Let's claim God's name. And boy, the first sign of trouble hits, and he absolutely caves, okay? How do you think Abraham's feeling that 10 to 14-day journey home to Israel? Yeah. He got punked by God, right? He just got his first real tail whooping, right? And he realizes, man, I blew it. I sinned. I'm an idiot. Probably was a pretty quiet journey back. It wasn't festive and fun. I don't know how much food they're bringing back, but it's a interesting deal, okay? So, yeah, he's actually coming back with bigger problems, right? Because he's got exactly more stuff to feed, okay?
Pharaoh said that he took her for his wife. Doesn't that mean he slept with her?
You get the impression that God shut it down before that happened. So I think order of operations, I'm assuming that God did not allow all of that to take place, so.
Gotta be like at some point, like once you get over the embarrassment of it all, like some sort of relief though. I mean, he's gotta be thinking like, how's this gonna play out?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean I get more stuff and keep my wife and another wife?
So. Yeah. Yeah. You wonder, right? You're gonna see, by the way, the sign of blessing in the New Testament, if you're a Christian and you're walking with God, what is promised to you? According to Paul to Timothy. Tribulation, suffering. Isn't that fun, right? The sign of blessing in the Old Testament, you guys know what it was? Prosperity. You know where we get our prosperity gospel from? It's from people that read the Old Testament and say, see, when you are blessed by God, you get fat, rich, happy, Lamborghinis, all that stuff, and they take that filter and they place it on the New Testament. Paul says, all who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will experience suffering, okay? Remember that. So don't put your hand on the TV. Don't send a check to Benny Hinn, okay? Abraham is going to continue to get more and more wealthy because God is blessing him. We no longer live in that dispensation, so unfortunately. Yeah.
They're all blessed.
Yeah.
By faith, they all suffered.
Yep. The Hall of Fame is, yeah. It'd have been interesting to live in the Old Testament times, right? That was the sign of blessing so that everyone around you knew that the hand of God was on you. Now it's suffering, okay? So think through that even personally. It's convicting. Like, how much do I suffer day in and day out? Okay? So he's headed back home. 13, let's pick up there and let's see what happens. Okay, so again, the southern portion of Israel, the southern boundaries of the Negev. We'll spend time there when we go to Israel. Probably one of your favorite parts of Israel will be baking the 120-degree sun in the Negev. Oddly enough, you'll love this, okay? Keep going.
Now, Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold, and he journeyed on from the Negev as far as Bethel.
Okay, so he goes to Bethel, which is, he's walking in back north, okay?
To the place where his tent had been at the beginning.
To the place where his tent had been in at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place, verse 4, of the altar which he had made there formerly. What's Abraham doing? He's going back to what God called him to do. When's the last time that God and Abraham were dialed in? Yeah, when he was building altars in the land. So what does Abraham return to? I'm going back to my altars, okay? Give me a counseling nugget on this. Abraham's walking with God. Abraham stops walking with God, is an idiot. What do you do in your life when that happens?
Turn around and go back to where you were.
You go back to the last place where you had fellowship and intimacy with God. For Abraham, it is a physical place. I built an altar here. I worshiped God here. I had a relationship here. I was obedient here. He goes back there and says, man, I need to start living not like this, like I was in Egypt, but the way I was living in Bethel and Ai and the Oak of Moreh and when I worshiped God and took a stand for him, okay? He takes a stand again, verse 4, to the altar where he had made previously. And there, verse 4, notice what Abraham does. End of verse 4.
Abraham called upon the name of the Lord.
He goes back and says, God, I should have done then what I'm going to do now, which is talk to you before I turn-tailed and ran to Egypt and tried to figure this out on my own. I'm going to go back to the place where I last knew you and last walked with you and get my life right, okay? It's a very simple, very practical counseling note for all of us. Man, when you blow it and you're in sin, where do you return to? To the last place where you had communion and fellowship with God. Go back there. Okay? Not physical per se, but in a relationship sense. Walk with God, get on your face, pray, and reestablish what you were doing, patterns in your life, whatever it was that were healthy and good, go do those again. Okay? And rocket science, but Abraham needed to see that and feel that. Okay? So God is going to hear his prayer, this is a good move for Abraham. Okay? So, okay? You with me? So, hard lesson. He's walking home with his tail between his legs, and it had to feel that way, and that was public for everyone to see. They got booted out of Egypt, okay? So he is feeling a little bit less manly. Gets on his face, prays to God, and says, Lord, I'm an idiot. I blew it. I shouldn't have done that. Where do we go from here, okay? Now, verse 5, let's see if he learned a lesson.
And Lot, who went with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents, so that the land could not support both of them dwelling together. For their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. In that time, the Canaanites and the
Perizzites
are dwelling in the land.
Okay, so what's going on now? They got to separate. Why? Because they're too blessed, basically, right? Interesting what's getting them in trouble now. It's their stuff. The stuff is what made Abraham leave and go to Egypt because he had to take care of all of his stuff. Stuff comes with baggage, okay? God is blessing Abraham. He's rich. We found out in verse 2. Very rich with silver and gold. He is loaded. His nephew Lot is living in the wake of Abraham's blessing. And he's getting more stuff, more cattle, more herdsmen. And they're getting to the point where the land physically cannot sustain them. Okay? Now, these guys are Bedouins. They live in tents. They have livestock out there. There's not a whole lot of permanent structures and dwellings at this point. They come and go as they need to. Wherever the land will support them, that's where they go. Okay, so these are desert-dwelling nomads, if you will. Okay, so there's now strife. There's too much stuff and too little land, too little water. We can't support each other in this endeavor. Okay, watch what Abram does, verse 8.
Then Abram said to Lot, "Let there be no strife between you and me, and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if you take the right hand, then I will go to the left."
Okay, so what's Abraham's counsel? Peace. We need to have peace, okay? We're family, okay? Let's not be in strife with one another. Let's not argue. Let's make sure we have a good relationship. So here's what we're going to do, Lot. What's he telling? Pick a direction. Really? Nephew Lot gets first dibs on the land. What's Abraham doing? Why would he give Lot first dibs? Who has rights to take whatever the heck they want to? Abram, God called me here. God called me to this land. Dude, I'm taking care of you, right? Snotty-nosed brat, your dad died. I drug you with me, right? I'm taking care of you. You're nothing without me. Literally, he's not, okay? But why does Abraham do that? Lot, you pick. If you go to the left, then I'll go to the right.
I'm gonna trust that he's gonna get back later.
Dude, God, last time I picked, I went to Egypt. It didn't go so well, okay? Lot, you pick whatever you want. God, I trust that you're bigger than this, and you will put me in the land that you want me. We both know we can no longer live together. This is not working, okay? We've got to separate. But he gives Lot first choice, okay? And I think that is a huge act of faith. So I think test three for him is, will you trust God for the land? Will you trust God to provide, okay? Like you didn't before. Will you trust God, pass or fail? And he passes. He says, Lot, you choose first. I'll take what God wants me to take, okay? I want you to see how Lot chooses, okay? Verse 10. Now remember, this is a young, single, maybe not single at this time. He has a wife, we know eventually, okay? But I want you just to see how he chooses. 10 and 11.
And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, and the direction of Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself all the Jordan Valley, and Lot journeyed east. Thus they separated from each other. Abraham settled in the land.
Okay, stay right there, okay? Make some observations, 10 and 11. How does Lot choose?
Based on looks.
Yeah, Lot lifted up his eyes. What looks good to me? What do I want? Does that sound familiar? Lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, the boastful pride of life. Lot looks with his eyes, says, what's good for me? Verse 11, so Lot chose for himself. I like that land. That is plush. It's beautiful. It has tons to offer me, okay? By the way, where is it? Verse 10, what two big cities leap off the page? Sodom and Gomorrah, okay? Sodom and Gomorrah, what was going on during Lot's day is the same stuff that's going to be going on in chapter 19 when God says, we're done with this city. It's like, yeah, I know it's Las Vegas, but it has a lot to offer. Probably not the best morally. I'm going to go live, not in it, but just kind of close to it, because the land's really green, okay? That's Lot. Chooses for himself. No prayer. No, hey, God, what do you want me to do? Where should I go? Okay, there's no, Abraham, you're wise. You're older. You're a mentor of mine. What do you think I should choose? He chooses for himself. Young, prideful, hopefully Abraham's beginning to learn some of those lessons. Lot has not yet, okay? Lot chooses for himself. And Abraham says, great, take it. Verse 12, what's Abraham choose? Canaan. Abraham settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled in the cities in the valley and moved his tents as far as Sodom. Okay, as far as Sodom. Remember that with Lot. He's not in Sodom. He's outside of Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay, verse 13, here's your commentary. Read that on Sodom. Okay, my version says, we're wicked exceedingly and sinners against the Lord. Like, that's a lot of adjectives, right? Not just sinners, but they are wicked sinners, exceedingly wicked sinners, sinning against the Lord, okay? It's like, man, I'm out of words. This is a bad deal. This is not a good place for Lot to be. He just moved and parked his RV right outside of Vegas, okay? Interesting, okay? Absolutely. Absolutely. They would have known in that close of proximity, they would have known Sodom and Gomorrah. And if not, Lot gets sucked into that vortex. It's like the Death Star. You know, I'm caught in the tractor beam and I can't get away. Okay. He's like a fly flying through the blue light. Hey, looks good. No. So that's Lot. Okay. Abraham's going to have to come save his bacon more than once. Okay. 14, though, watch what's going on with Abram.
After Lot had separated from him, lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land that you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever.
So how does Abraham choose?
Yes, God.
God says, now look. All of this, look around you, Abraham. I'm going to give it to you and your descendants after you. It's yours. So you see his patience. It says he settles in Canaan. He stays where God wanted him. And God says, now, Abraham, you look with your eyes. Okay? And you're basically looking with my eyes. I will give this to you. Verse 16, I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if anyone can number the dust of the earth, then they can number your descendants. You're going to be huge. Arise. Walk about the land through its length and breadth, for I will give it to you. See it here? God says, walk the land. It's yours. I'm giving all of this to you. Abraham moved his tents and came and dwelt by the oaks of Mamre, which are in Hebron. And there he built an altar to the Lord. Very different picture than we get from Lot. Outside of Sin City and ready to take in all that that city has to offer. And you've got Abraham who settles and waits and says, God, what do you want me to do? God says, this is now yours. Abraham builds an altar and says, all right, okay? So kind of a tale of two different personalities. Abraham's certainly blown it. Looks like he learned a pretty good lesson in chapter 12. Goes home with his tail between his legs. Chapter 13 ends a lot better, okay? So he passes test one, and he goes to the land of Canaan. In the midst of famine, does he trust God? Not so much. Fails test two and goes back, but into Egypt. Gets booted out of Egypt for lying, and it almost goes horribly wrong. Picks up a virus named Hagar. See also chapter 14 and following that we're going to see. Chapter 15, we'll get introduced to her. And then test three, God asks Abraham to trust. He lets Lot have first dibs and passes that test. God chooses for him, and he ultimately is now at the end of chapter 13, resting, trusting in God. And we'll see the fallout from there next week. Okay? So let's stop there for today.